and KMOX. Sweet 16 seafood coming up at 4. That's all you really need to know.
Yeah.
Just shut up.
It's a seafood buffet.
That's all you need. It's all the content you need today.
I mean, it's the best.
You want to talk about the UFC and all that kind of stuff? Or president says that the deal with Iran has literally been signed.
So, I thought they were signing it on Friday.
Nope. He says it is signed, which sounds like a lie.
It was an e-signature. I'm not even kidding you. I think I saw a report on that.
They said that the text of the agreement will be released sometime after Friday. I don't like that. I just think that if something this important is being agreed to, we should know immediately. A lot of rumors out there. One of them is that Iran has requested and been agreed to getting $300 billion as basically reparations to the damage that the U.S. military did. J.D. Vance was asked about this in an interview today, and he confirmed it that, yes, this is something that could happen, but Iran's going to have to jump through hoops. I don't think this is going to go down. I think if it does, it will end up being trashed within weeks, months at the most. But even if it does, I don't know what we've gained, because the deal, as I understand it, and no one understands it completely because we don't have the text, but the deal, as I understand it, is that we're going to have a 60-day window during which we can negotiate with Iran about their nuclear ambitions. So basically give them a whole bunch of money to go, in my humble opinion, to go back to where we were before. I think we had a better deal under Obama. We didn't go to war. We didn't spend $100 million. I think we sent them $1.5 billion, something like that, of their own money. And if you say to me, well, yeah, Dave, but they didn't honor that and they kept enriching uranium. Yeah, they did. And they're going to now. And they obviously did it between the first time we obliterated their nuclear capabilities and just a few months later, they were 2 weeks away from a nuclear bomb, which they, you know, the closest they've ever been. So they clearly, you know, didn't honor anything. You can't trust them. I don't know what the answer is. Above my pay grade, they're a giant problem, but I'm afraid that we've created a bigger problem and we've made them stronger. That's my fear.
Well, what did we get out of any of this? Like, what did the United States gain?
To me, my way of thinking, so far, nothing. Now, if
is there even like an official narrative as far as what we've gained?
Well, I think they're going to spin it that, hey, all you need to worry about is they're never going to have a nuclear bomb. Okay.
Because we're going to sign something with them yes. Pledging that?
Yes, but no one has said that. Well, we've said that they've agreed to it, but every time we say it, they say, no, we have not. Now, I'm not unreasonable. If you said, hey, you have no idea, Dave, how terrible this would be if they got a nuclear device, it's worth the $100 billion. It's worth the $300 billion. We got them. It's ironclad. Okay. $400 billion isn't what it used to be. But with all of this, like, woulda, shoulda, coulda, maybe if it goes well, we'll end up with something. That's just not, I don't like that.
All right. So if you get the we will never build a nuclear bomb in some form of guarantee that could come with consequences if they break it, You could argue, okay, that's the thing. That was the goal from the beginning. That's what we wanted to achieve. Could you have not just offered them $300 billion up front to do that instead of going to war? Instead of spending, what have we spent so far? 40, 50 billion so far?
I think it's closer to 100.
But that's not counting the cost at home. That's not counting all of us paying more in gas for the last, how many months has this been going on now? Because my understanding is, I think it was Moody's that did the explanation on it, but basically it was an extra $450 a month for every American for added expenses based on what happened with the oil prices and how that impacted other things. And there was an estimate, I think Harvard, somebody else did an estimate that the long-term cost of this could be $1 trillion of what we've done. Not counting the $300 billion that we may or may not be pledging to help them rebuild. Could you have not just gone to them in the beginning and said, hey, how about $300 billion? Their annual GDP in Iran is $300 billion. That is their entire annual GDP. Well, so if you offered that up front, maybe there was a deal to be made there.
Crimson Deathbed says, I'm sorry, regardless of the party in the White House, we don't have a great history of negotiating with the Middle East. True.
Well, I mean, let's be real, okay? We screwed all that up. We screwed all that up starting in the 1950s. And you couldn't be more right. It's been every administration since, both Democrat and Republican, that have been a part of screwing that up. We screwed it up because we wanted the West-friendly people to be in power there when the people there didn't want that. We can say the people there didn't suit our needs, but it's not our region. It's not our country. We don't get to be the ones that say, you. And we weren't alone. I think that we had the issues in the 1950s. We were working with the British because the British had massive oil, interests in Iran under the Western friendly regime, under the Shah. The people didn't want the Shah. So we went in and undid that. Not alone. I'm sure we did it with our European allies. But we started all this stuff by screwing around for business because it was business interest. It wasn't about national security in the 1950s. It never was. So we're still paying the price because nobody has been able to go back and fix that.
Rach?
I mean, I think to Wheels's point a couple minutes ago about like the $300 billion, we should have just offered that up front. I mean, I think it's clear that we entered into this thinking it was going to be like an easy thing and like we got this in the bag. I don't think the administration or anyone wanted to pay the $300 billion. I think the $300 billion is our best bet at saving some sort of face on this.
And I think, look, everyone listening knows I don't like Trump, but I'm also not crazy. A president who I don't like or trust can still do something good.
Yeah.
And I try to be open-minded, like, okay, I don't like him, I don't trust him, but he made the right decision on this one. On this, I feel like he went into it for bad reasons. I think he got his you-know-what caught in the ringer. I think he's desperate to get a deal, because if this keeps going into the midterms, he could lose, you know, both houses of Congress. And I really think he's just trying to put lipstick on a pig.
I think it's just, it's gotten out of hand and it's time to seize the opportunity to end it if we can. I think that's really what's happening. It's like, okay, $300 billion. Okay, is this good? Is this good? That's really and truly what it feels like. I'm sorry, the American people were never given a clear and definitive reason for initiating all of this in the first place. We were demanding answers the first couple of weeks, and then as so many things go, it drags on, more things get brought in, more complications,
yeah,
and then you
the
just
water.
Kind of lose sight of the original problem.
Yeah.
It's a war, it's not a war, it's a war when it's convenient, of course it's not a war, we reset whenever this and this and this happen. It's gotten completely out of hand. I truly hope this works out, I really, really do, but I don't look at it as like, USA, we did it again. Like, it feels like we're just kind of trying to get out of it.
Remember how shocked Trump was? Like, there's video of it in the Oval Office where he goes, no one saw this coming. No one thought that Iran would attack other countries in the Middle East or shut down the Strait. Are you kidding me?
Literally every military intelligence analyst said they would.
Yes, and they told him that beforehand.
Yeah. The only way there's a win in this is if there is a written guarantee saying we will not pursue nuclear weapons. And here are the penalties we agree to if we do it. That's the only win, because otherwise we're just back where we were.
And to be clear, that didn't exist before?
No, it didn't. not in the same direct way, right? I mean, because they were, at least according to what we've said, they needed to be bombed. Last year, you know, they were clearly days away or weeks away based on how they're phrasing it. But who's they?
What are you talking about?
Well, the government, the White House, they were always saying they're close. And who knows who they're listening to? But that's the word. The word was, hey, this could be months away. They're getting close. We can't wait. It's imminent. We have to be, you know, because remember the whole thing was if Israel goes and then Iran starts to attack us in return because they'll always link the two of us, well, we need to prevent that. That was kind of one of the initial rationales provided. Does anything, if nothing changes, how are there no consequences for taking us into an action, costing American lives, raising all of our costs of living, and then getting nothing in return?
I've always been a big supporter of Israel, and there's not an anti-Semitic bone in my body, but I am uncomfortable with the degree to which it seems we are doing things in the best interest of Israel. In fact, the president said about a week ago that if we had not gone to war, Israel wouldn't exist. Okay. It's a pretty big statement, but I just don't like how tied into this we are. And it's obvious that Netanyahu has his own, you know, set of wants and needs. And it seems to me that every time we're close to making a deal, Netanyahu attacks Lebanon. And then Iran backs off and Trump calls him the effer. It feels very out of control. It doesn't feel professional. And I just don't trust it. I don't trust Iran at all. And to be honest, I don't trust our government much more because it's like 40 times now he has told us it was done. Why should I believe this time? And even if it is, if it does get done and there's something signed, why should I believe it's going to be good? Seems to me that Iran stood up to us. And if I were advising Iran, I'd say don't sign anything because you got us by the balls. You do. You may not know it, but you got us by the nuts.
I think they're aware. that's been clear over the weeks and weeks of like, it's coming any day now. Like, I think they realize they have quite a bit of power here.
DGS 222. While we are on the topic of politics, can't just let it go without talking about it at all. The UFC event last night, I don't have Paramount. I didn't watch it. I saw a little bit on TikTok and on the news programs and such. Here's my take. I can't believe that after 250 years, our pinnacle is Lee Greenwood and Kid Rock and UFC fights and motorcycles jumping. It's like, I can't believe that. That doesn't seem right to me. I don't like it. It doesn't represent me. I think it's Hoosier as F, but that's just my opinion. I'm one out of 350 million people. There are tens of millions of people who love that stuff and who would hate the stuff that I like. So I try not to judge it that harshly on that. But I thought it was pretty embarrassing. Rachel's played the cut two. This is some UFC fighter I'd never heard of before in my life named Josh Hokit, who I guess is kind of the bad boy of the UFC. And he was being interviewed afterwards live in front of the whole crowd by Joe Rogan, who, by the way, I've always been fairly cool with Joe Rogan. Like, okay, I see what you're doing. You're a smart guy. But this whole UFC thing has really made me lose respect for him, where he'll one day say, like, oh, I'm not in favor of this and the fighters shouldn't that. And then he shows up and hosts the whole damn thing. And when you hear what this guy says, just know that Joe Rogan is smiling like a monkey and laughing his ass off and totally cool with what this guy's saying.
Michelle Obama is a man. Am I right, America?
Whoa.
You don't have to like Michelle Obama. You don't have to like Democrats. But you are on the grounds of the White House celebrating 250 years. Maybe don't say something mean about a former first lady.
Man, that's what you really wanted to say? That's of all the things you could have said, this was your moment. You could have said, I love you, mom. I love you, son and daughter and wife. God bless America, 250 years.
And they caught...
That's what you chose? You chose to use your moment to say that? That makes me really sad for him.
They caught Dan Bongino leaving and asked him what he thought, and he said he thought it was great. He said, I think it was hilarious. You have to be able to take a joke. Look, I'm a professional joke maker and taker, and... Not everything should be subject to a joke.
What's the joke?
It's good. That's a great point.
What's the punchline?
That's a great point. Yeah. It's just something really mean and scandalous to say that made people laugh. That doesn't make it a joke.
Well, it made certain people laugh, and it's the people that they're targeting that they need. Okay? Less than 20% of the country follows mixed martial arts. To make that your big country celebration, your country's big celebration... It's I think it's something like 15% of Americans call themselves MMA fans. Okay. I watch it. I don't have a problem with combat sports. Totally cool with me. I'm into all sports. I was into boxing when it was bigger. It's fine. But I'm not in a large group of people there. And I'm not a diehard. I'm more of a fringe MMA person. But again, it's less than 20% of the country that actually follows that. What percentage of the country do you think really gets into stunt cycling? I love Nitro Circus, by the way. Those Travis Pastrana, those guys had a funny TV show. Their stunts are amazing. No issue with me. But if we're celebrating the nation, why are we targeting very specific things that appeal to a very small percentage of people? Yeah. And it's the same group of people that the administration targeted for the last election, the Manosphere. Those guys love those jokes about Michelle Obama or anything along those lines. They're playing to a very specific audience that they clearly think they need badly to be in their camp. And a lot of those people turned on them when they turned on when the Epstein Files thing came up. A lot of the Manosphere podcasts, we were fooled. They're not doing what we said. This looks like a gigantic makeup gift. Yeah, to that very specific targeted group of people.
But UFC said that it had to pay the tab for the entire event. It was $60 million. Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. They're going to get it in. They're going to chalk it up as marketing. They're going to either write it off or use that as their marketing budget because it puts them on national TV where they might not otherwise be.
But it wasn't on national. Like I would have tuned into this just for the spectacle and to see what it was like. But I'm like, I don't have Paramount. Like I'm not going to pay to watch this.
Right, but I mean, Paramount's probably paying them. So, because they're not giving Paramount the rights to televise this for free. Somebody's paying UFC to put that on TV. So, yeah, they may be paying the cost of the stage and all of that. There's a get back for the UFC in this. Somewhere.
Trump also said today, I believe, could have been yesterday, when asked about the 250th celebration, you know, it was going to be Milli Vanilli and poison and stuff like that. He said it's going to be a Trump rally. His words. It's going to be a Trump rally. I also hate that. And I would hate it if it were Biden or Obama or Hillary Clinton. It's not about you, dude. It's about the country turning 250 years old.
Right.
You just happen to be sitting here at the time.
Right.
It's not about you.
Right. Well, but it is. It is. And by the way, Paramount has a $1.1 billion a year deal with UFC. So...
That's a lot.
Yeah, I mean, that's not directly related to this, but this is my point. The money's coming in for UFC to cover that amount if they're doing it, and they feel like the publicity probably gives them even more of a boost moving forward.
Welcome back, guys. DGS on KMOX. Time to talk to your pal, Bernie Miklas. Hello, Bern.
Yeah, good Monday to everybody.
You too, buddy. I was frustrated over the weekend. I know all the Cardinals fans were. I know this is baseball. I know that bullpens letting you down is just a part of baseball. But, man, especially Friday night was just really frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, they should have won the series. You can...
Yeah.
You can see them lose in one game they should win, but they really were in position to win all three. And they were lucky, not lucky, I'm sorry, but they were fortunate to hang on and win and survive the game that they did take on Saturday. But it's interesting. I'm not going to sit here and try to tell anyone the bullpen was good, because it wasn't. It was awful. The final three innings of that Minnesota series, they got lit up. They got pounded. They got bruised. They got battered. ERA was like, the ERA was like high in the sky, just awful. But the interesting thing, though, is I think a lot of people that were complaining about the bullpen, as if this is a bullpen-only issue, we're kind of missing something, with all due respect. Mm-hmm. This is what happens when you have starting pitching that does not provide innings. If you go back to the final game in the New York series, you know, Hunter Dobbins only lasted 4 1/3. Kyle Leahy barely got through 5. Then it was Matthew Liberatore on Saturday who pitched 4 1/3. So Ollie Marmol... And listen, I don't agree with every decision he made in the series in terms of the bullpen, but Ollie Marmol, you know, basically was cooking his bullpen. I mean, they had to cover so many innings over the, not yesterday as much, but the point about yesterday is, even though McGreevy gave him 6, the bullpen had already been fried by then. You know, in other words, it's not like because he pitched 6, all of a sudden the bullpen was fresh. They were tuckered out from the 3 previous days. So it's a situation where, you know, for 3 days, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, the starting pitchers got 41 outs. The bullpen was asked or responsible to get 40 outs. You know, and when you have that kind of 50-50 thing, your bullpen will get worn down. It will be depleted. You will have tired arms. You will be scrambling for solutions. You'll be trying to put anybody in there that can get you an extra inning or so. And so, you know, I one more thing, and I'm sorry because I know I'm going on too long, but this is the only way I can prevent Wheeler from talking. So anyway,
it's the filibuster.
No.
The answer was sitting there this whole time.
You just gotta keep talking, man.
One more thing. Now I forgot. People, it was all over the place. People were saying, boy, what do the Cardinals have to do to fix the bullpen? You got to fix the bullpen. You go, what do you do to fix the bullpen? Well, first of all, get more damn innings from your starting pitchers. You know, the Cardinals bullpen for about 5-6 weeks before this recent stretch was one of the best in baseball.
Yeah.
But when guys are cooked, they're not going to pitch well. So, you know, the Cardinals need to do something about getting more innings from 2 spots in that rotation. Sorry, Wheels. Go ahead, buddy.
No, not at all, man. It's 100% the issue, and we'll go deep on this today on Redbird Rush Hour. It might be the only topic we have time for, because it'll be a little bit shorter show. Well, we'll have to make some time for Blaze Jordan, too, because he had a fun weekend in his Major League debut. But, you know, I just did a little bit of dig and burn. I sent it to you and Matt, and this kind of illustrate the point as to why the bullpen is being taxed the way that it is, and it's the two big culprits are Leahy and Liberatore.
Right.
So right now, they are not much better, if they are better at all, than Fetty and Michaelis were last year. Depending on which standard you want to look at, like ERA, these guys are better than Fetty and Michaelis were in terms of ERA last year. But when you look at their batted ball numbers, how much hard contact they allow, how much damage they allow, the expected ERA. So Eric Fetty's expected ERA last year, 5.41. Michaelis, 5.27. For this year, for Liberatore, it's 5.44. So the same as those two guys. And for Leahy, it's 6.59.
Right.
6.59.
It's crazy.
So, and the funny thing is, and we were texting about this, so this is a little tease too, both of those guys could be really impactful relievers because we've seen it. And if they're not going to get the job done in the rotation, somebody else should be getting that opportunity.
I did a video, and it's not up yet because I was running late today. I wasn't feeling well earlier today. But I made the point in the video towards the end, so I give away the ending. The Cardinals could improve their rotation and their bullpen just with one move, basically.
Yeah.
Moving Liberatore and Leahy to the bullpen, where both of those guys were really, really good. So you do that, the back of your rotation is going to be better, and your bullpen will definitely be better. You'll have more depth, more quality depth. So do I think they're going to do it? I don't know. I mean, maybe one of those guys will go to the bullpen. Kevin Wheeler and I and Matt Pauley were talking about this too. Dave, what makes it worse, or makes it – the repercussions are more severe, let's say, is because the way the rotation is set up, you know, Leahy's the fifth starter, then it's the rotation turns over, Libertor's the next guy to start. So those guys go back to back, Leahy, then Libertor. So if you've got two starters, both of whom have had a devil of a time, you know, getting past, you know, 4 2/3, 5 innings. I mean, they very, very rarely pitch 6 innings. So when you have two guys back to back, that means on a lot of situations, you're not going to get innings for 2 days in a row or 2 games in a row from your starters, and you're going to put a huge burden on your bullpen, and that's why bullpens get blown up in the Twin Cities and they stink, and everybody says they suck, and nobody looks at the fact that the starting pitchers left them hanging.
Yeah. Smart, yeah, and I think even Bernie, even if you've suggested this for days now. So I want to give you credit for it. Even if they're not ready to take anyone out of the rotation, splitting those guys up would be a great idea as a starter. And if that doesn't help sort things out, well, then one of them should be demoted to the pen and Dobbins should get those starts.
You know, guys, this could be kind of the pitching version of what the Cardinals just went through. Like, they watched, and it's okay. They, you know, the Cardinals didn't hit in May. I mean, they were just near the bottom of the league and everything, right? So, but they were waiting for guys to come around. Okay, yeah. We think this guy will get better. We think that guy will get better. We want to wait on it. We don't want to rush. Okay, fine. I get that. But it eventually got to the point where Chaim Bloom said, enough's enough.
Yep.
And then he shook it up. You know, he brought up guys from Memphis. He brought up Blaise Jordan, Nelson Velasquez, and Jimmy Crooks. They gave a bigger role to Jose Fermin. And all of a sudden, you look up and the Cardinals have a bench. All of a sudden, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 in the lineup is really good. So the point is, you know, we saw them kind of drag their feet on doing something about their position player mix, which was really lacking in some ways.
Yep.
When they finally made the changes, they got instant results. So are we going to follow the same pattern with this for a while? It seems like it. It seems like it.
Sure hope that it has the same result, because, you know, it's around the same time of year too. And I'm I understood, I think we all, you and Matt and I, we all supported the idea of giving it a look with Leahy, right? I mean, it made sense coming into the year. That's fine. How long do you have to go though with a guy that has been killing you? I mean, he is in the bottom 2% in baseball in hard hit rate against and the average exit velocity against. As I mentioned, he's one of the worst in expected ERA, and he cannot get through the two times through the order. So where's the argument that there's upside, and he's 29. He isn't 23 or 24. This isn't we're going to grow with a young guy. This guy's 29. I think we probably got to be close to making a call here.
Yeah, if you go to the StatCast thing, you look at Libertor's page and Leahy's page, it's a lot of blue, and you want red. It's a lot of blue. No, listen, I thought Leahy last year was fantastic. I thought he was remarkable because he gave the Cardinals 2 innings of relief like 19 times, and he gave them more than an inning in like half of his appearances, and he was valuable. He was so good. Is he more valuable to the team being in that role, or is he more valuable to the team as a guy who's trying, working hard? He's got a huge heart. Where he just can't get past that wall, that barrier, where fourth inning rolls around and he starts to lose it. He gets to late in the second time through the lineup, he starts to lose it. So where is he more valuable? I would say the role he had last year. And to your point about him being 29, and I'm not trying to be harsh here, but very, very soon, the Cardinals are going to have some outstanding prospects who've got huge talent coming up and ready to take jobs in the major league rotation. Is Kyle Leahy going to be able to, will he still be in the rotation when some of those guys that we've all heard about come up? Of course not. I mean, not to be cruel, but no, of course not. So what's the point exactly? I mean, he's not going to be in your rotation. He's not a long-term guy in that rotation.
Yeah, and if you made that move and somebody gets hurt later in the year, well, then fine. Go back to him. Let him get his 3 innings and piece it all together the way you're doing now. But at least then you would have tried something else.
Yeah, that's right.
I think we got that figured out.
Yeah, I mean, look, teams tend to move more slowly than the general public when it comes to opinions like these.
Yeah.
But to Bernie's point earlier, and I think to Hein Bloom's credit, they did show this year that they move faster than this team has in the past with what they did on offense. Mm-hmm. They just need to do the same thing now for the pitching staff.
And also, this isn't a Victor Scott situation, who had become, let's be honest, kind of useless. Leahy and Liberatore would not be useless.
No.
They would be very useful.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah, that's right. I think one of the beautiful things about the Cardinals and the Hein Bloom in the front office that he's put together is that they're already so much stronger within their own system. They're already so much stronger where they can go down to Memphis and they can summon guys, position players, and they can fix a huge problem.
Yeah.
I mean, that is a big, big change, and it's such a positive change.
Yeah. Byrne, tell us about Saliga. Welcome back, DGS on KMOX. John Moriarty is going to be with us at the top of the hour. About 3:20, I've asked the guys for permission to scoot out for one short segment. Phoebe is spending her summer out of town, and we don't get to talk to her much, and we're all going to FaceTime. So,
fun.
Yes. Let's do.
I can't wait to talk to Phoebe.
We'll do it live.
Do it live.
Get her on the stream.
It's like, hey, Phoebe, surprise.
She'd be like, what? Are you wasting my time with this?
She's just, like, we don't even see her face. She just hangs up.
She immediately
hangs up the second she sees us.
Yeah. that Glover would.
I mean, that's what I would have done at that age. I'd have been like, nope.
She's like, oh no, I don't have Wi-Fi.
This really surprised me. Gen Xers are in their 50s, and 33% are still dependent on their parents.
What?
Ooh, does it say for what?
Said everything from paying part of their mortgage to paying their cell phones to borrowing money, but they're not financially independent from their parents. A third of Gen X.
Does it say if Kevin Wheeler is one of them?
I would like to be, but I'm not.
Man, that's surprising.
I would never have guessed that.
Yeah. I mean, it does kind of illustrate a couple things because that's not going to be any more hopeful a sign for millennials or for Gen Z. I mean, if it's the trend, that's not going to be a specific to one generation thing. It means that essentially that wealth is not getting passed down. People are not getting the same opportunities that previous generations got.
Yeah.
I saw a statistic the other day that was talking about how a lot of people, when they're buying their first home, get help with the down payment from their parents.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of the summation of what they were saying was like, if you don't get help from your parents, like, don't feel bad. It's not like you're that behind in life. There are more people getting that extra help than maybe you realize.
Yeah, evidently.
And it's interesting to see that extend into your 50s in some situations.
Yeah. I have other statistics, but I want to get into them when we can talk. We have time. Away from all these people.
Yeah.
We'll talk
about it on the break.
All these people listening in.
You just save it. Save it for the FaceTime.
Yeah. Let this be us and Phoebe.
If we hacked that FaceTime, Dave, on a scale of 1 to 10, how mad would you be?
What do you mean hacked?
Like if we like showed up on it somehow.
Oh, I wouldn't be that upset. Again, I'm not the Glover you need to worry about. It's the girl Glovers. Yeah. The boy Glovers are chill. You've met Nick.
Mm-hmm.
So no kids on Father's Day.
No.
Nick's heading out for an out-of-town bachelor party. What are it cost to rent a kid these days?
Probably pretty cheap if you look in the right place.
You got three kids right here. You could ask.
Yeah.
What's the fee?
Andrew, can I come along with you and your dad?
Sure. I don't know what we're doing.
Okay. You better get on that. You better get to planning.
I better get to planning. I've seen a lot of him in the past couple of weeks. He probably doesn't want to.
There's your present.
I actually know he doesn't because we were thinking about maybe having dinner last night, and then he called and he was like, I'm just pretty tired. Yeah.